My name's Linda Jenkin Costanzo. I'm from Clarence, New York. I've been a native of Western New York my entire life.
And you are the author of Our Sons, Our Heroes, which are first-person recollections and memories shared by Gold Star mothers whose sons perished in the Vietnam War. And in your introductory section, you explain how the genesis of all this, remembering years ago meeting a Gold Star mom in a local theater.
That's right. My sons were about 8 years old. I took them to the Theater of Youth in Buffalo and was sitting next to an elderly lady about 75. She was there with her daughter and grandchildren. We struck up a conversation about the play, and out of the blue she said, "Yes, this is one of my children. I have four. However, I lost my son Mark in Vietnam." And that just stopped me right in my tracks, because I grew up as a teenager in the Vietnam War, and I had never been touched so deeply by somebody who brought this to the foreground 35 years after her son was gone. And then I realized what this lady was telling me was that nobody had really asked her any questions about the loss, and it left me thinking for days after, what would this woman have said if the curtains hadn't drawn up, if the room hadn't gone dark, and if the play hadn't begun? So that was the catalyst that got me thinking there were probably many other women like her who never had a chance to share their deepest feelings about losing sons in a war. And this is what started it.
And as you're looking through some of the testimonials, Shirley Popoff immediately came to mind. And it was just the recollection of a time when mentioning you had a connection to Vietnam would get some rather nasty responses. And did as you were interviewing these ladies, was it that thought that, you know, the reason why they didn't speak after all these years is because, given the tone, they were never comfortable doing so?
Absolutely. The Vietnam War was a very controversial war in our country, and people strongly took sides. Either they were against it or they felt we should be there. These mothers were caught in the crossroads. Some of them had kids that were drafted and had no choice. Others had sons that willingly left. One or two dropped out of school and went. Shirley's son was one that went right into the Marines after he dropped out of school. And these mothers supported their sons, whether they were drafted or whether they chose to go. And then, as they saw what happened with the war, some of them just retreated and sat back in silence because public would say something to them. Or in one case, with the Gold Star mother I met in this book, with Lillian Schulte, she had a relative make a very snide remark to her once. So these women were just devastated. This was the World War II generation, who were young girls. They came to the airports and to the shipyards to see their husbands return, or their boyfriends, and they watched their World War II husbands later become such respected people in our society. Just 20 years later, they have sons, and look how this country has changed in its attitude toward war. And there were their sons right out there catching all kinds of footage on TVs of them in Vietnam, and it was very unpopular.
You were a young teenager yourself during the Vietnam era, as you described yourself in the book. And what were some of your recollections just hearing people out on the streets of Western New York during Vietnam?
I came from a very pro-military family. My dad was working at a Nike base at the time. I was 14 in the mid-60s, but my older brother and sister really saw it for what it was. By mid-65, with Iodrane Valley coming into view, my brother and sister saw it all. My brother enlisted in the Navy, did not go to Vietnam, but did serve during the Vietnam War. So that's what they called. He was a Vietnam-era veteran. I wrote some friends of his, and the letters that came back were just unbelievable. They mentioned things in letters which they probably wouldn't have mentioned to their families. The one was a big, tall Irishman, very strong, sturdy looking. His job was to unload, well, rather to load the caskets onto planes. That's what he did all day long at Da Nang Air Base. And he mentioned some things about being attacked in the middle of the night. Sometimes they had practically nothing on because the heat was so unbearable. And then the enemy came through and would attack. So I learned very quickly from those letters, as well as writing the books and listening to these mothers years later, you don't just listen to the words that are being told to you, and you don't just take the words that are written in front of you. You listen to the words that are not spoken from these mothers. You look at the face when they gaze out the window and go back 40 years or 35 years. That is what I wrote from my heart to add to this story.
I imagine there was some catharsis from a lot of the mothers that participated in this. Do you get the sense in some of the entries that this may have been their first genuine release all these years later?
Absolutely. And the reason is because there were no grieving counselors back then. There were no psychologists for these women to go to. And let me just add here, this applies to the fathers. The Gold Star Fathers organization is not as large as the Gold Star Mothers. And these men suffered silently. Many of them passed away long before the mothers did. And I will always wonder if somehow the stress and the grief just overcame them, and they just found no way to talk about it. Most of the fathers in this book that I wrote, most of them had passed away when I wrote this. There were two or three that were alive. One is still in South Buffalo, marvelous man. But the other one was from Indiana, and he sat there right with his wife talking about the dreams that he had, and these people told me of premonitions that Shirley Popoff in the very first chapter told me. She was sitting there and suddenly she just had the most overwhelming feeling of total peace, and she knew right then and there that her son halfway around the world was gone. So that's probably one of the biggest things they shared with me. They also told me a lot about their personal life, and I've made friends with these people.
And that leads to my next question, and then I want to talk about another one of the entries, is that these women have really opened up and intimated to you some thoughts that have been held deep down inside all these years. So tell me about the bond that you've now formed with many of these mothers who participated in the project.
Some of them have since passed. Sadly, Shirley Popoff has passed. But those that are still alive, I am in contact with Marge Miller from Indiana. She always sends me a Christmas card, and I usually pick up the phone and call her at least once a year. The mother in Arizona, I hope to get out and visit soon because I plan a trip this winter to the Southwest, and I would love to go up to the Navajo Indian Reservation and visit both mothers. Their kids speak English, so there would be my translator, because in the story, as I mentioned, these women, the one mother did not speak English at all, so I had Navajo translators for both of them.
And I wanted to point out the Sadie Key, whose son was Navajo.
Benny Hushkin.
I recently met one of the Mohawk, the last surviving, at least known surviving Mohawk code talker. There were Navajo code talkers, Cherokee, and Mohawks. And just Native Americans in general, serving the country, perhaps under the irony that we don't necessarily have a history of treating Native Americans well, relegating them to reservations, kicking
That's
off.
That's right,
on.
Yes.
And yet they too have responded to the call. Tell me about working with Sadie and who admitted that she just wanted to kind of sit back rather than be up front and center at one of the memorials.
Yeah. Sadie was a very, very shy, quiet lady. She was an introvert. She had 13 children, and she lost her oldest, Benny, in Vietnam. She had 12 others, and she always said, "I just stayed home. I did not want to be involved with anything. I know there were three or four others on the Navajo reservation that were Gold Star mothers, but I did not reach out to them. So she was one lady who was a Gold Star mother that never joined the organization. And I need to mention here, the difference between a Gold Star mother and an American Gold Star mother is simply this. Those that choose to join the American Gold Star organization, whose capital is in D.C. or whose headquarters is in D.C., for a fee of about $15 a year, they get newsletters and they are brought into an organization that is a real sisterhood of women who've lost sons or daughters at any time. So if they join the organization, they are American Gold Star mothers. Anybody who has lost a son or daughter while serving this country is a Gold Star mother. So that's the slight difference. And I just want to mention, anyone who has been serving our country, even in a time of peace, or who has lost their life while serving right here in our country, their mother would be a Gold Star mother in the event that some casualty would come to them or some loss.
Are there specific benefits or entitlements that Gold Star mothers or Gold Star families get upon the passing of a son or daughter in active duty? Are there any special benefits?
Are you talking insurance benefits?
Right.
Back in the Vietnam War, usually it was $10,000. Their bodies were flown home, and from what I can understand, different situations have risen. If they wanted to have their sons buried in Arlington, that was obviously an option. If they flew home, there were times when they had to cover some of the expenses. So they were given a check of $10,000. My understanding is that this has gone up dramatically with the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, but $10,000 was the amount of money that was given to World War II Gold Star mothers, from what I can understand. So basically, this amount was never even increased over the 20 years before the Vietnam War broke out.
Now, people with more of a knowledge or closer relationship to the military or people in it would be familiar with Gold Star mothers someday, but a lot of lay people might not. Does it surprise you if some people out in the public ask, you know, there's such a thing as a Gold Star Mother Sunday?
Yes, it's something that was very popular and well known and recognized right from World War I on, because it started in the year 1928. Or about that, 27 or 28. So we're coming into 90 years of the existence of this organization. When World War I and World War II were over, the Gold Star mothers were recognized, especially in churches throughout the country. That was where these ladies were given recognition on the last Sunday in September. The Vietnam War is precisely what caused the decline in the population or in the membership of the Gold Star organization. The second chapter in my book was best shown by the mother who was national president of the organization. She said at one time there were 60, 70,000 Gold Star mothers in the organization after World War II. By the time I interviewed her on the Vietnam era, and I interviewed her in the year 2001, the number was 3,000 Gold Star mothers. Now that's a dramatic drop. Why was it? Partly because the way the war was seen by the public, these mothers were told, not by other Gold Star mothers, but rather they were told by the public or anybody else, well, you know, it wasn't really a war, it was just a conflict. And this is exactly what happened to those that were in Korea. And it was called the Korean conflict all the time. It was not called a war. And that was so wrong, because these women were not recognized from the Korean War, just like the veterans were not recognized when they came back from Korea. So the look that the Americans had on the Vietnam War caused many mothers to not want to join the organization. And when the organization declined in popularity, And with the decline in people going to church on Sunday, many of them are not aware of it because churches were often the area that recognized these women and brought it to the public for them to learn about.
Now, I'm of a generation, I'm 48 now, where my history books did call it the Korean War. They did call it the Vietnam War.
Okay.
And in the 1980s, the late 80s maybe, you started to see kind of a change of attitude toward the Vietnam veterans. One of the scenes I remember of all films was the first of the Rambo movies, First Blood, where Sylvester Stallone, at the end, the standoff is coming to an end, and he goes into this tearful soliloquy of, you know, you trusted us with millions of dollars worth of equipment, and yet you won't let me push a broom, or you can't trust me with a minimum wage job now that we're back here.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just, now mind you, it was an action film, but at the same time, it kind of opened up the eyes to saying, yeah, these guys did what their country asked them to do, and then they've come home, and they've been treated like dirt since. And now, of course, you've got the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who came home to heroes' welcomes, starting back with Desert Storm.
Yes, yes, they did.
Do the Gold Star mothers of the Vietnam generation, is there a feeling, at least of some satisfaction or comfort, knowing that the sons who have gone since in future wars in actions, that at least, was there any sense of consolation that at least the newer generations were not going to make that same mistake again?
How do you mean not make the same mistake?
Well, meaning that these Gold Star mothers did face some public backlash, some scorn. Shirley Popoff recalled overhearing a guy in a bar saying, well, the kid had it coming to him.
Yes,
and,
right.
Was there at least a sense of satisfaction at knowing that your families today don't get that same scorn or backlash or catcalling because their child was serving in a war?
I would think so. I can't say because I am not a Gold Star mother, but the best thing to do would be to ask some of the Iraqi Afghanistan Gold Star mothers, if they have been treated better than what they perceive the Vietnam era Gold Star mothers to be treated.
And I guess in my question, I was kind of non-linear with putting the book together. You mentioned that some of the entrants have since passed away. When did you first start collecting all of these?
I started collecting in October of 2000, so it's going to be 18 years next month. The end of October, I went out to the Boston Hills, just outside of Hamburg, New York, and Shirley Popoff was the first person that I spoke with. She introduced me to a Gold Star Mothers chapter in South Buffalo, of which she was president, and at that meeting, she said if anybody would like to talk with Linda, she will be taking stories, and I strongly recommend that you give her some of your time. And after that brief meeting in South Buffalo, I must have had five women all come up to me at once. And right there, I knew again that I had a good story to tell the Americans about something that was never discussed. I knew I had a good story just sitting with Shirley Popoff in October of 2000. When I sat there and the room grew dark and we had spoken for over 2 hours, and I listened and listened, I knew right then and there that this was a chapter of our country's history, which nobody knew about.
Now, the book was copyrighted. This was published in 2013, according to the copyright date.
That's right.
So this was not something that you rushed to put out. This was very carefully crafted over, you know, more than a decade.
13 years.
Before you decided it's time for this to be released.
Yeah, yeah. I was working full time. And this was my project in summers, on vacations, in evenings. I had a family to raise, and this was something that I kept building and building on. I became an associate member of Vietnam Veterans Chapter 77 in Tonawanda. They were very helpful. And as time went on, I would reach out to different areas of the country because I would sit here thinking to myself, what is the underlying thread that is woven through these stories that I've had so far? And every time I would come up with an answer, it was basically, these were women of incredible faith. They all believed that God would get them through the next day, no matter how hard their day or their moment was. And every time I would think about going somewhere else in the country, I always wound up finding the same thread woven through all the stories.
Yes. When you consider the pain that they had to carry all those years, I mean, faith does get them through it.
Yeah, the fathers and the younger siblings would talk, but I was advised by people who edited my book to just keep it to the Gold Star mothers. I have a folder an inch thick from someone who was MIA in the Buffalo area. Robert Dichkowski was a downed pilot in Vietnam. He went down around 1966. I located the family because somebody at the Vietnam Veterans Chapter said, you know, here's an interesting guy, he's been missing. So I thought I would talk with the mother, but she had since long passed. And the sister, Susan, was so willing to talk with me. She gave me photos that were classified top secret at the time of the sites where his plane went down. She gave me medical records on this man. She gave me everything. And I just feel I owe Susan an apology that I could not include the story of her brother in my book, because I was advised, keep it just to the Gold Star mothers at this point. But everybody has given me copies of letters, records, some military records. It's unbelievable what I've gotten. Is just to mention, for Western New York, the only veteran that was killed in the Vietnam War was Bob Kelsu. And when I was given his name again by the chapter to consider looking into, his wife, his mother had already passed, but the uncle of Bob said, you know, his wife Jan is a dynamite lady. I'm going to give you her number. Well, wouldn't you know it, I wound up stopping in and visiting Jan Kelsu in Oklahoma, where Bobby Kelsu was from, on my way down to Arizona. She said, come on out, I'll be glad to talk to you about my husband. So here was a woman who was a Gold Star wife. And I'll just mention, Gold Star wives were started in World War II. Last I heard, the lady who started it is still alive. But Jan invited me to her home. She told me all about Bobby playing for the Buffalo Bills that first year and what it was like being a mother and having her husband out playing football. And then she told me about her experience of having the chance to see him in Hawaii when he was on furlough before he was later killed in Vietnam. So I've always felt it would be great if the football stadium were named perhaps Veterans Stadium, or perhaps Bob Kelsu Stadium of Buffalo, New York. That would be the best way to honor a veteran who was very dedicated to the ROTC program while he was in college. And when the Bills called him, they said, you know, we can get you a deferment. And he said, no, I've played for a year and I need to get this taken care of. And that's when he left the Bills and went to fulfill his time in the Army.
Which cost him his life.
It sure did. A very, very sad story. His wife had just given birth to the baby boy, Bob Kelsu, and she was still in the hospital when the priest came in, and she knew from looking at him that something was wrong. So Jan always said, you know, I can't help but think the way that Bob was killed, I wondered if, since he came rushing out, if he was thinking there was going to be mail about the delivery of this little baby boy, and that's when he was killed. So Jan Kelsu has been a wonderful, wonderful person, incredible lady of faith also. And I've met her son, Bob, and her daughter, Jill. Lovely kids. She raised them both.
You've got two sons of your own.
I do.
Which, you know, now, did they serve, or are they military, or did they at any point?
They are not military. They are in law enforcement. So I kind of think of them as the veterans who are guarding our border, in the sense that my one son, Josh, is in customs and immigration. And I always have to explain to everybody, that's not Border Patrol. Border Patrol goes behind the scenes and they chase down those that are sneaking into the country on foot or perhaps with a car. That is Border Patrol. That is totally different. Customs and Immigrations are the people that meet you at the border, and they look over your documents to see that you are coming back into the country or that you are entering the country for the first time legally. My other son, Brian, presently is in the Baltimore Police Academy, and I guess I've just raised kids that have a sense of right and wrong. I don't know how this all happened.
Sense of service, but yeah. Not necessarily through the military uniform, but nonetheless a sense of service.
Yeah, I tell them that. I get conversations all the time, and I get stories of the drugs that are busted coming up from Arizona. That's where my son Josh is right now. He's doing a temporary duty there from Buffalo. He's in Nogales, Arizona. And he has said the whole thrust here is to slow down the drugs. So it's amazing. He'll tell me 50 pounds of meth were pulled out of some car door on the inside, and heroin coming across. He already got a minor injury already, chasing somebody down that tried to walk right through. And I worry about that, but then I say this is life. There has to be somebody guarding the borders of this country.
And the fact that you do have sons, maybe perhaps there's no draft anymore and hasn't been for a while.
Yeah.
But as a mother of sons, if a major conflict were to ever arise, they could be theoretically be brought into duty. Was that ever in the back of your mind as you were meeting with these mothers and realizing that, maybe my sons aren't military, but they too had young men who had whole lives, perhaps had their big plans laid out in front of them, but had to take this time out first to go take care of a service?
I thought of that all the time. It was constantly on my mind, because when I sat in the foyer one sunny morning in August in the year 2000, and I looked out, my sons were playing outside. They were 9 years old, and I said, my goodness, these kids that were killed in Vietnam were 9 years old, just like my sons, and in 9 more years, my sons could be in the service at 18, and they could be following the same paths that these mothers' sons followed. And I said to myself later on, oh my gosh, what happened in 2001 when they were a little older? We broke out in Iraq, Afghanistan. So it was then that I said, my perspective from a 14-year-old looking at these kids that used to come home from the service and visit my brother at Christmas time of 1966, then they went off to war, and they came back very different, obviously, after what they had seen. So I saw that from the perspective of a young teenage girl, and I used to think to myself, these guys are only 4 years older than me, and they're going to Southeast Asia. Well, 30, 35, 40 years later, I'm now saying I'm the mother of kids that could be out there serving this country. In fact, I'm older than some of these Iraqi Afghanistan mothers who've lost sons. And I think to myself, what a perspective I've gained on seeing these young kids go when I was a teenager, and now as a mother who looks at her kids. Sadie Key, the Navajo Indian mother, had said, these are our kids. When is this country going to stop doing this? So Sadie had a lot to say, and she was so shy. But the one thing that I remember about Sadie was when I sent when I sent my story back for her to review, nobody on the Navajo Reservation had realized what she had gone through. And when they looked at everything that she had suffered, raising these kids and being very a recluse in some ways, they said, wow, we have to get this lady to Washington, D.C. to see the memorial where her son's name is on there. So the story that I sent back for review to a translator to read to her wound up being pretty well known on the reservation, and the Vietnam veterans, I believe it was Tuba, Arizona, or maybe it was right there in the town that she lived in, they flew her to Washington, D.C. for Gold Star Sunday. And she She proved to be very shy and quiet because in that event, they hit a parade and they said, don't you want to be in the cars and you can be in the front? And she said, no. I want to stay on the sidelines. I want to be in the crowd and I just want to watch it go by. But she really came forth later and said, oh my goodness, I was finally able to peacefully say that yes, my son had been recognized. And that was the concern of all these mothers. If the country's constantly speaking down about the war, and in some cases saying things to these mothers who lost sons, they just want to know that their sons will be remembered. And that was what Sadie Key said later on. She said, I finally realized my son would be remembered because his name was on the wall. And she needed to see that. And it was a great comfort to her. There's no closure. I was asked recently, do you provide closure? I think any Gold Star mother and any veteran who has served combat will say, it's pretty tough having closure. But what it does is it helps ease your way as you go along each day. There is comfort there in some way, knowing somebody has written a story, somebody has listened to you, somebody has recognized you. And I'm going to put it out on my website, on the www.sonrisapress.com. I'm asking that people look for a veteran's family this week and just thank them for serving, if that is a Gold Star family. I think it's important.